Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
Hey, I'm Sydney.
Sidster. Dr. Sid, what's going on, babe?
Oh, just, you know, I'm not feeling too good today.
You don't sound great to me right now.
Ah, no. Just a little tummy pain. Just a little...
Let me feel right here. Let me see where it's tender. Okay, that's bad. Whoa, my audio just spiked really bad. I'm sorry for those at home. Sydney did not mean to be in such mortal pain. What's going on, sweetheart?
Please don't do that again.
I won't do that again. Just tell me what's wrong. We're going to get through this.
Well,
Is it gas?
No.
I know you like when I ask, is it gas?
No.
Is it gas?
No, if I wasn't hurting so badly, I'd punch you.
What's wrong, sweetheart?
I've got this pain. It's kind of down in like the right lower part of my stomach. I think I'm running a fever. Yeah, definitely running a fever.
You probably think you're making it obvious to people what's going on with you, but us noobs need a little bit of guidance. What's the problem, sweetheart?
I hate to break it to you, but I think I got an appendicitis.
Oh no. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I keep drinking this beer to try to make it go away.
Okay,
it's not going away.
That can't be advisable, medically speaking.
No, I hate doctors.
Yeah. Well. Wow. Really?
Huh. Yeah. I can't stand them in hospitals. I don't want to go to the hospital.
All right. So what?
Surgery. I don't want to go under anesthesia.
What are you gonna do after you pick up your Oscar for awesome acting? What are you gonna do?
I don't know what you're talking about.
What are you gonna do?
I know this is going to sound kind of crazy.
Go on. I'm here
but,
for you.
But, I mean, you know, I went to medical school, and, like, technically, that license, I mean, it gives me a right to do anything, you know? Like, I mean, I have the right to do surgery if I want to. I mean, I don't have privileges anywhere because I'm a family doctor, but I can do it.
You could do it.
I mean, I've seen them. In med school.
Wait. Sydney, are you right now in our home suggesting that you are going to take out your own appendix?
I just think it's the most reasonable option.
That seems unlikely.
It's no big deal. I've got to get down to the hospital. I've got to steal some local anesthetic, hopefully some sterile drapes and a scalpel.
Okay, I'm going to make you a deal. Okay, here's my deal. Are you willing to hear me out?
Okay, we don't have much time, though, probably.
All right, here's my deal. You take this pill that will make your appendix stop hurting for a half hour. It's appendicil. You take this pill.
Is this a patent medicine?
This is appendicil, and it'll make your appendix stop hurting for a half hour. And you, if you can show me there's any historical basis for doctors doing this sort of thing, I will let you remove your appendix.
Are you sure this isn't just...
Bottoms up.
An opium... Oh. Wow. That really works.
Not bad, right?
That's some good stuff.
Mostly meth.
Oh.
Whew. All right, you got 30 minutes to go.
Riding this dragon for 30 minutes. I'm excited.
Ride the snake. Tell me about doctors who have performed surgery on themselves.
Well, I'm not breaking new ground here, Justin. People have done this before. back in 1949, there was a doctor in Colorado, George Balderston, and he didn't, luckily for him, didn't have an appendicitis, but he did wonder what it was like to be under anesthesia. He wanted to see what the experience was for, he was a surgeon and he did, you know, surgeries. And so he wanted to see what the experience was like for his patients. So he decided, you know what, you don't need your appendix. Might go bad at some point. I better just take my own out.
Okay. Okay. I have a problem with Dr. George Balderston. I'm assuming he's dead, so I can't bring it to him directly.
Well, he did survive the surgery. Spoilers. Sorry.
Okay. That's fine. Dr. George, I can dig you wanting to see what anesthesia is like. I don't know why you had to choose that moment to remove your appendix. That seems like sort of throwing good money after bad. Like you're trying to see the effects of anesthesia. That's fine. Why can't you see the effects of anesthesia on you like trying to do a Sudoku? Like, I don't know why you had to see, like, I gotta see how bad this is. Let me get a knife.
Well, he just wanted an authentic experience, you know.
His patient, he wasn't an authentic experience by like doing some light gardening on anesthesia. Why do you have to choose that moment to do surgery on yourself?
I think the most amazing part is he didn't use a mirror to do the surgery. I don't know. I've tried to envision the position you'd have to lay in to get a good view and not use a mirror.
I think it's downward facing dog, right?
He was back to work in 2 days. Yeah, there was also some thought that the reason he did it is because he had been kind of criticized publicly by a member of the community who said that he had done a surgery and that he'd botched it and he wasn't a good surgeon. And so he wanted
where do they get off?
He wanted to prove to everybody.
Questioning Dr. George.
He knows what he's doing.
He's a seasoned pro.
He was not the only one in history to remove his own appendix.
Really?
No. There's actually what I think is a pretty cool move. So unlike Dr. Balderston, Dr. Rogozov, which is a name some people may be familiar with, he was a physician at the Soviet Research Station in Antarctica back in the 50s and 60s.
No native bees in Antarctica. We learned that from the Chase yesterday.
That's right. There are no bees there.
There might be bees, but they are like tourists. They are not native.
They're just visiting.
Bees.
They're just visiting bees. Can you imagine how cute they are with their little Hawaiian
little
shirts
and their stripe parkas?
Bee cameras.
Love it. Okay, so tell me about this cat.
So he, like I said, he was the only physician stationed at this research setup, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. And he started having symptoms that he diagnosed, he finally realized were an appendicitis. Mm-hmm. So you got to figure that's pretty scary. It's 1961. Transportation home is not readily available. An appendicitis is a time-limited condition. You know, you've got to do something about it before it ruptures.
Because if that thing bursts, it's bad news bears.
It usually is. You know, there of course it can rupture and it can kind of wall itself off in like a little pocket of infection. So it's not always immediately fatal. But yes, it's a bad situation. It can flood your system with toxins. You can become septic. You can definitely die. And that's what he thought was going to happen. He actually wrote about how he was getting sicker and he knew what was happening and he didn't want to tell anybody else around him. He had like a mechanic and like a geologist and other people who were very intelligent but had no idea how to do surgery. And he didn't want to tell them what was going on because, you know, he knew the end was coming.
So what did he do?
So he decided to take matters into his own hands.
Literally.
So he got his friends. Actually, I think it was a mechanic and a meteorologist who were at his sides and handed him instruments. He used local anesthetic and a mirror and removed his own appendix.
Fantastic.
It's pretty amazing.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
See George? See Dr. George? That's how you do it. Wait for the need to arise.
Yeah, I think it's more heroic when you actually need to. To continue kind of the storyline here, that you really don't want to be stationed in Antarctica for any reason. There was another doctor in the 90s, Dr. Jerry Nielsen, who, there's actually a great book written about this, and I think there was a movie based on it too. She was stationed alone there, the only doctor. She discovered, on self-breast exam, discovered a lump in her breast.
Oh no.
She biopsied it herself. She actually teleconferenced with doctors who did those procedures to tell her how to do the biopsy on herself, which is pretty amazing.
That's crazy.
And not only she did one, but then the way that she kind of stored the tissue and sent it to be, you know, examined under microscope and all that, it didn't work. It wasn't viable. So she had to do a second biopsy on herself. But I mean, she did it, and she diagnosed herself with cancer and then gave herself chemo there.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she was doing it with the help of, you know, doctors teleconference then, but I think it's pretty amazing.
That's fantastic. Wow. I don't have a joke to say. That's like the hardest core thing I've ever heard.
Well, I thought it was the hardest core thing I ever heard, but as I was kind of looking into this idea that, I mean, my thought was probably only doctors did self-surgery, because why would you think about doing surgery on yourself if you didn't at least have some familiarity with anatomy, physiology, scalpels. Anything? Yeah, scalpels. You know, how blood works.
Blood, bones, all the important parts.
So,
gully works.
What I found is that what I have dubbed civilians or non-medical personnel are actually maybe even more likely to attempt surgery on themselves.
Unsurprising.
And those really, of us in the medical profession.
Yeah, I can do that.
And there are lots of reasons.
People watch cooking shows and think they can be on MasterChef. Like, I don't know why we don't all immediately assume, like, well, I watched ER until it got bad. I watched most of House. I can handle it.
I saw Clooney stick that straw in that guy's neck.
Yeah, I'll stick a straw in my neck.
So there have been, like I said, non-medical personnel who've attempted various surgeries. Some because they had to, others because, I don't know, the doctors seem like an awfully long way away.
Lazy? You're saying they're lazy? Pathologically lazy?
One patient that definitely had to was as recent as 2000, Inez Ramirez, who performed her own C-section.
What could have necessitated that?
She was.
How did this catch her by surprise?
She was laboring on her own. She had labored for many hours and realized she was in a remote area, didn't have a midwife or a physician or a nurse or anyone to assist her, realized that the baby was not going to come. This was her, I believe, fifth child, so she was familiar. And she decided.
She knows a clinger when she sees one.
There's only one way that this baby's coming out. So she got, I believe, a kitchen knife and performed an auto C-section.
Auto C-section here, meaning like to herself.
Yep.
Just sliced it open and cut that baby. I wonder if she had a scar already. I wonder if she had already had a C-section, because that would be almost sort of like tracing in a way. I think that would make it a little bit easier if you had a scar to work on.
No, it doesn't.
That you know of.
It
you
doesn't don't make it easier. Now, if she had, there's just more scar tissue that you have to get through.
Oh, man. That is rough.
No, but she performed her own C-section. The reason that it's fun to tell this story on a podcast is that she did survive. Absolutely. I believe she actually sent one of her young children, like her 6-year-old son, to call for help.
Not the baby.
Yeah, you know, she covered up. No, not, hey, listen, not the newborn.
This is a family. This family is about nothing if not self-sufficiency. You are gonna go learn to use a phone.
This is a fair trade. I just cut you out of my own uterus. You're going to go for help.
You can pick up an iPhone and push the buttons. Use Siri. Okay, I'll let you cheat, baby.
Although to be fair, hopefully if she had Siri, that would have been the first call.
One would hope. If she had even 1 to 2 bars, I think is enough to get 911 on the horn.
she survived, and the baby survived. The child got help, and she was taken to a hospital where the wound was repaired, and she had damaged her bowels and stuff too. And anyway, they fixed everything up, and she did better. So a really heroic story.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Next time, I hope she goes to a hospital, though. I don't think that's a trick you want to repeat. No, why tempt fate? That's what I say.
This heroic story is, I think, a little bit in contrast to, let's go back pretty far to Boston Corbett, who, again, I'm sure you know who that is, Justin. Obviously.
If my history does not fail me, that was the inventor of the Malomar. Boston Corbett.
That's completely wrong.
Okay, who is Boston Corbett?
He's the soldier who killed John Wilkes Booth.
Okay, all right.
He performed surgery on himself, obviously not a C-section and not an appendectomy. But he castrated himself.
Now, why did he do that?
He was tempted by prostitutes. He was a God-fearing man, did not want to give in to this temptation, and so he thought this was his only recourse.
It must have been hard for Boston after killing John Wilkes Booth, because he knew the publicity was coming. he knew that the reporters were going to start swarming. Like, listen, guys, I'm happy to answer a few service questions. Let's not get too personal. Boston's made some decisions, okay?
There's a lot of skeletons in this closet.
And not as many bones as you would think.
Wait.
I removed my penis bone.
Wait. Do you know what castration is?
That's I know where it's where you remove the balls.
Can we say testicles? We're adults here.
The testicles.
Just making sure.
The testicles.
And for the record, there is no penis bone.
Well,
I just like to say that publicly.
I agree to disagree.
In humans.
I agree to disagree.
I think what's great about the story is that he castrated himself and then he went to his prayer house, I believe, said some prayers and then went and had a nice dinner and then went to the doctor to seek medical attention for his open wound where he castrated himself.
I wonder what dinner is the right pairing for having just removed one's testicles. It's for better men than me to say. I myself would only let a seasoned medical professional remove these testicles.
only the best.
Suffice it to say. Well, and also, think about it. You're Boston Corbett. You killed the man who killed Lincoln. Who's going to challenge you on your manhood? Hey, I killed John Wilkes Booth. You can't make jokes at my expense.
Doesn't matter that I remove my own testicles.
A lot of John Wilkes Booth actually made fun of him. That's why it happened. It had nothing to do with Lincoln.
Hidden history.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hidden history. Our new podcast where I lie and Cindy enables.
I hope he had a steak, or just something really decadent. Oh, Justin, I'm sorry. That's my pager going off.
Oh yeah. Go ahead. Go for it. We'll wait.
Okay. I'll be back.
Hey, it's me, Jesse. Max Fun Con is MaximumFun.org's annual gathering of friends in the mountains above Los Angeles. Join us this spring for comedy, classes, talks, and parties with your new best pals. Tickets for the 2014 edition go on sale Friday, November 29th, and to be honest, we cannot add any more bed capacity, so expect it to sell out quick. Head to MaxFunCon.com the day after Thanksgiving to grab yours.
Okay, sorry, I'm back.
Oh, no problem. Is everything okay?
Yeah, just try to avoid using any, you know what Band-Aids are?
Yeah.
Stay away from those. Definitely just stay away. Just for the next 2 to 3 years.
Who's next on our list, Sid?
So next, I want to continue with our non-medical personnel who performed surgeries on themselves. Johannes Lathaeus is one of my favorites. We're going way, way back to 1620. And Johannes removed his own bladder stone.
Those can be unpleasant. I know that. Now, okay, can I ask you a question and you promise not to make fun of me? Is that different than a kidney stone?
Well, it's just in a different place.
The bladder.
Same idea.
Okay. You know, Griffin used to get kidney stones.
I know. They're very painful.
Oh, boy. He did not like them.
They're very painful, and so are bladder stones.
Now, he went to the doctor like a wussy. He didn't have the guts. Despite my encouragement, he did not have the guts to remove it himself.
Well, he's a wuss, unlike Johannes.
Tell me, what's...
He decided, you know, this bladder stone is driving me crazy. He could feel it because it was that big. Ugh. And so he decided that he was just going to take it out himself. Before he did it, he did ask his wife to go to the fish market.
Why?
Well, he just didn't want her around. I mean, it was
He was just trying to get her out of the house. That was what passed for fun in those days.
Yeah, why don't you hit the fish market, hey, honey? Okay. Thanks, Johannes.
Here's 2 pence. Go treat yourself to a nice haddock.
He got his brother to help him. So, see, Griffin could have just called you up.
Mm-hmm.
gotten some help. See, and what he did is he told his brother, so if you'll just pull aside my scrotum real quick.
You know, family connections can run really deep. There are very few things I wouldn't do for my brothers. But the moment I hear the words, just pull aside my scrotum, slip past their list. Well, folks, I'm on the nearest Greyhound back to Huntington. Guaranteed.
He, in the meantime, grabbed the stone kind of through the perineum. You know what that is? That's the area.
That's the taint.
Oh, don't use that word. Yes.
That's the taint.
That's that area there.
That's the taint.
He grabbed that and just used a knife that he'd prepared somehow, gotten clean in some manner.
After what historians agree was at least 6 to 8 hours of sharpening. No, not quite yet.
A little more.
No, a little more. Sharper. Just a little sharper. I think we'll be ready to go.
He completely sharpened out of existence 3 knives before finally... Finally settling on this one.
No, that one broke. I whittled it into infinity. New knives. Gosh, yes, these knives, huh? Don't make them like they used to.
So he made an incision in his perineum. And the way it is described, all of this is described by Dr. Nicolaus Tulp, who wrote down like accounts of different kind of medical oddities at the time. And the way he describes what he did next, so he made an incision, and then by standing again and again, managed to make the wound long enough to allow the stone to pass. I try to work out those mechanics in your head.
Because I can't. No, I don't care who is in. I could have 40 Billy Blanks encouraging me to do those particular calisthenics, and I still don't think they would have the desired effect.
He eventually had to reach in and actually remove the stone. Just put his fingers up there and pull it out.
Just go for it. Bored of the whole thing.
Thank goodness at that point he actually got someone who knew something about medicine involved, called someone for help because he had a big hole where it shouldn't be.
Well, his fingers got stuck. What do you want him to do?
And it healed up actually pretty nicely, and he survived his bizarre procedure.
See, we rely on doctors so frequently, but little did you know, we rarely really need the capital M.
I don't know.
Capital N need them.
This was a 4-centimeter stone, too. Pretty big.
Woof.
Deborah Sampson is a pretty cool character. She's from 1782. Mm-hmm. Member of the Continental Army, posing as a man.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. And she fought bravely, took 2 musket balls to the thigh, and her comrades started, you know, carrying her to the hospital, you know, because she'd been shot in the thigh. But she was adamant she didn't want to go because she knew she'd be discovered. So they managed to get her to the hospital, where she took off and ran away, limped away, rushed away.
Not ran away.
But escaped and then dug 1 of the 2 balls out of her own thigh to avoid being found out as a woman. The other one remained there, and she had a limp all her life.
Deborah Sampson, you are the coolest person that has ever been alive.
Pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome, Deborah Sampson. I think you had, at that point, can't you just, I would think that they would not make a big fuss. But don't you think that she could have, you know what? Shame on you, Deborah. I think if you had just owned up to it and said, yeah, I'm a woman, and I've got 2 musket balls in my leg, so who is tough now?
And I am going to take them out myself.
Watch me.
You know what I actually think is sad is I think she was actually wounded again later, and then they did find her out. She, you know, was in a condition where she couldn't hide it, and she was taken in for medical attention. They figured out she was a woman, and she was discharged from the Army. Unfortunately, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, yes, but let's just assume that Deborah, despite her apparent real thirst to kill people and defend this great country, maybe was through with the whole enterprise at that point, right? I mean, she had probably had her fill of warfare. I know I would have. I could have a musket ball within a football field range of me and be pretty much done with war. Maybe Deborah was ready for a break.
Let's tell the story that way.
Yeah, let's
like
go
it
with
better.
That.
You it's know a what? Happier ending.
You know what? I'm going home. War is dumb. I don't want any
war
part of
it. War is dumb, and I got shot.
I got shot 3
and,
times.
And your
I'm
biggest,
out.
And you know what? Your biggest ish is that I'm a woman. So
wow.
I'm over this.
Shame. You know what? Shame on you. Shame on all of
Shame
you.
Shame on all of you. Shame Take a long, hard look.
Think about what you're doing.
So before I tell you about my favorite doctor.
David Tennant.
Well, that should be everyone's favorite doctor, clearly. But my favorite doctor who performed surgery on himself.
Okay.
Which hopefully David Tennant hasn't.
Look out, David.
Don't, David,
Don't
please.
Do it.
Please. Sydney's asking. In the 1970s, there's a patient that I want to talk to you about first who could not control his libido and performed many acts of onanism, if you get my drift. And in an effort to control that, he also...
Masturbation.
Thank you, Justin.
My pleasure.
He removed both of his testicles, similar to our previous patient.
Mm-hmm.
But this wasn't enough. He still found that he had the desire, you know, his sexual desire persisted. So he actually attempted a procedure where
one would assume there was a lull.
Well, yeah.
For at least a few days.
I would think. He actually attempted to cut the nervous input, the denervate, so cut the nerves to his own adrenal glands because he thought they were releasing the hormones that were causing the problems.
Accurate?
This is so much more complicated than that.
Yeah, there's a lot of
There's a lot going on here.
yeah, no kidding.
But I think it's pretty fascinating. He actually read a lot of surgical texts and anatomy books to try to figure out how he could, I mean, not remove his adrenal glands. He wanted to go in and just cut the nervous input to them. It's just kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it seems misdirected.
Luckily, he couldn't complete the procedure. He called EMS. He got help, and he also got psychiatric help at the same time. Thank goodness.
Hey, listen, I think it was the right call.
I want to tell you about lastly my favorite doctor who did not only do one surgery on himself, but actually did three.
Okay.
Dr. Evan O'Neill Kane. Lived from 1861 to 1932.
Barely.
Well, that's not far off. He was a surgeon from Pennsylvania, and he was actually, you know, a pretty cool guy overall. He opened his own hospital. He was, at the time, there were railway surgeons, which you could think of it similar.
That's a euphemism for hobos, right?
No. Like a, you know, like a flight surgeon or somebody who...
Okay.
So, I mean, you think about at the time there would be these long trips by railway and you needed somebody who could, you know, perform procedures and stuff.
Couldn't always wait to get into the nearest town.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. He was a railway surgeon. So he did some like kind of neat trauma stuff. He created ways to like administer IV fluids faster. Well, not IV fluids. I should say administer fluids faster. It's hard to get an IV started. So he would put them through the skin into the subcutaneous tissue.
Especially on a train.
Well, that exactly. And that wasn't the best way to give somebody fluids, but it worked in a pinch. And he started using music therapy in the operating room to calm patients down, which actually there is some basis for.
All right, let's get to the cutting.
He also, once his own finger became infected, and he knew that it was the kind of infection that could become life-threatening, so he just went ahead and amputated it himself.
This is the problem with being a railway doctor. There's nobody, it's not like they have a backup. It's not like there's another one.
So he took care of it on his own.
Stop the train! We can't. We're busy.
Cut your finger off.
Cut your finger off. We're in a rush. Like, look outside of you. Kansas City is like right there. Please stop the train.
I'm sorry, sir. You're just going to have to cut that finger off.
It's going to have to come off.
Could you do it in the other room?
We've got a schedule.
That's going to bleed.
We've got a schedule to keep.
So he amputated his own finger, which in and of itself is not the craziest of surgeries. But he didn't stop there. He was intrigued by this idea that, I mean, I'm independent. I don't need help from anybody. I can do surgery on myself.
Very Beyonce of him.
So at the age of 60... he went into the hospital with symptoms that he knew were an appendicitis. He, while waiting for the OR to be ready and the surgeon to come tend to him, thought, you know what? We could do this with local anesthetic. They don't need to put me to sleep. We use ether too much. We need to stop using so much that I'm just going to do this myself.
It's a weird time to take that stand, really. You should really have that figured out before you get to the OR.
So they took him back to the OR, and he got all prepped, and he had assistants, and he was in a, you know, in an operating room and everything. He had a surgeon standing by to help out should things go awry, and he removed his own appendix.
Okay, that's all right. You're right. That's pretty wild.
But that wasn't enough.
He's not done.
That was not enough. Not for Doc Evan. He decided at the age of 70, when he had an inguinal hernia that he needed repaired, that he had sustained an injury, I believe, while riding a horse, and it had bugged him for a few months, and he thought, you know what? I can fix this. This is a little riskier procedure because of its proximity to the femoral artery. You don't want to cut that. So it took him an hour and 55 minutes.
Good. Take your time.
But he repaired his own hernia.
Why rush?
He used, again, only local anesthetic. And at the very end, he began to kind of drift off with just like the last couple stitches left to go. And so another surgeon had to jump in and help out. But what was interesting about it is that, like I said, not a normal guy. One of the things he liked to do to patients when he finished up a surgery was stitch his initial into their skin as he closed.
What? So they just had a K there?
No. He knew that patients probably wouldn't like that. So he stitched a K in Morse code onto his patients.
The Banksy of his time.
So that was what actually at the very end of his own self-surgery, he couldn't finish the K, the Morse code K at the end of his hernia repair.
Now, it's worth noting, everybody at home, that Dr. Evan O'Neill Kane he did this surgery when he was 70, and at the most, he lived to be 71. So maybe it didn't go super hot.
To be fair, he did develop pneumonia after the surgery. And
no surgery for that, is there, tough guy?
No, but I think it's pretty amazing that he did these. You know, it's nice to know for me personally that, you know, maybe I could do my own hernia repair. What do you think?
Cindy, real talk. Real talk now. Forget about the appendicitis that you took appendicol for. Because
that fixed that.
That came over the wire recently. That's a permanent fix for appendicitis. What would it take for you to actually do? You're like the toughest person I know. You probably would be interested in doing this to yourself, right?
I think I would. I think that I would be pretty hesitant in, you know, living in an area where I can easily get to a hospital and a surgeon should I need one.
If you die in that scenario, you're a goofball.
Right. But if I were in a situation where I had no help, I mean, I certainly, you know, people all the time remove their own stitches and staples and that kind of stuff after surgical procedures.
That actually happened to me when I lost my fingernail. I lost the stitches that came out on when the fingernail got caught on a carpet.
That was pretty traumatizing.
I mean, I guess you didn't include me on the list, but I mean, I guess maybe I belong there. I don't know.
I think I would do some minor procedures, like a cyst removal maybe, or like if I had something to cut open and drain. I could see a scenario where I could pull my own tooth out maybe.
Would you be more like, okay, that's
you know,
weird.
Tie it to a doorknob.
Here's my question. Would you, then to be honest, would you be more open to doing surgery on yourself or me?
Oh, on you.
Great.
Fantastic. Well, I could see what I was doing much easier.
Fantastic. Wonderful. You don't want me to go to the hospital? I'll just go to the hospital.
Well, when it's necessary. I mean, you know a lot of the things we didn't talk about, yeah, there are lots of...
You got a bloodlust, apparently.
I'm just saying.
Gotta get the chain man on the table.
There are a lot of cases of people who have limbs trapped under things and have to amputate them themselves, you know? There's like that whole movie about it.
And so you want to go 127 hours on me.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that when you have to do it, you do it.
How about you do me a favor? And if you're with me, you just go ahead and call somebody. Could you do that? Could you just call someone?
Okay, I'll call somebody, but in the meantime, maybe somebody needs to take action. And I'm just saying,
try the phone first, Sydney.
I'm just saying I've got the guts to do it.
We hope you have the guts to join us for another episode of Sawbones. We're here every Friday, and we hope you have enjoyed listening to the show half as much as we enjoy making it. Thank you to people tweeting about the show like Cheryl Klein, Leah, Sarah Ann, Michelle Lambing, Steve Kim, Matt Pasquale, Ian Kelly, Matt Armstrong, Benjamin Reed, Frank Conanen, I guess, Meredith Faber, Claire Bear, Paul, Matthew Page. So many of you are tweeting about the show, and gosh, do we ever appreciate it. That's our only way of getting the word out. So please, please, please tweet about the show. Use the at Sawbones, not the beginning, because then everybody doesn't see it, but give us a review on iTunes if you can. That would be amazing.
Oh, yeah, and thank you so much for all the nice reviews, all the people who say they listen to our show, who are playing it to their classes. Like school classes.
A little intimidating.
I'll try to keep them factual. I'll do my best.
Thank you to everyone reviewing. God, there's so many reviews. You guys are really, really the best. Holly Cal, Salamanda, Enjoy the Science, White Gunpowder, Epono 158, Supernatural 920, Alexa Nan B. Thank you so much to folks tweeting about or reviewing the show on iTunes. That is another huge help to us.
You can tweet at us too, by the way, at Justin McElroy.
And she's at Sydney McElroy, Sydnee. And we're at Sawbones if you want to tweet to us. And we are a part of the Maximum Fun Network. There's so many other shows you can go there and enjoy, like Stop Podcasting Yourself, Judge John Hodgman, Wham Bam Pow, One Bad Mother, Jordan Jesse Go,
My Brother and Me.
Stop Podcasting Yourself. So many others. It's a wonderful network. We're so pleased to be a part of it. But most of all, we're pleased to be a part of your lives for a half hour every week. So thank you so much. Don't know if we're going to have a show next week. That's a question that we're still trying to figure out.
We're going to do our best. We're going to be, can we say where we're going to be?
Yeah, we're going to be at the
Doctor Who 50th anniversary celebration in London.
Oh, God, we can't wait. It's like the nerdiest thing
ever. We're so excited.
But we got family staying in our house, so don't even try it.
Rubbish. Don't even try to break in. And we have two giant cats.
We have guard cats and a security system, so stuff it. And that's going to do it for us on Sawbones. until we see you next Friday, or the Friday after that, possibly. I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.